Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is James Cohn, professor at the Union Theological Seminary here in New York, the man often credited with founding Black Liberation Theology, which sought to ground the Christian religion with the civil rights struggle. You may remember that theology, one of its manifestations, from the controversy over statements by Barack Obama's minister Jeremiah Wright before the election. Dr. Cohn joins me now to talk about his new book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, which he describes as the culmination of his previous work. So nice to have you back on the show.
I'm glad to be back on this show also.
With all you have written about Christianity and the history of civil rights and discrimination and so forth, why is this the culmination?
Well, it's the culmination because it deals with a subject that I have not dealt with before. I grew up in the South, and lynching was a prominent reality during that time, and my father was threatened to be lynched. And so I sort of avoided that for a long time. And so I wanted to deal with it because I had to ask the question, how did African Americans survive the lynching terror?
And with your Christian orientation, has the suffering of Jesus, symbolized by the cross, not been explicitly linked before to post-Civil War lynching?
No, it has not been, except by literary people. That is, people like Langston Hughes and County Cullen. They did see the connection between the cross and the lynching tree and saw the lynching as the crucifixion, somewhat analogous to Jesus. And, of course, that is very close to what the slaves saw also, because they saw their experience is very similar to Jesus's too, and they created songs like, "Were you there when they crucified my Lord?" That's a rhetorical question because they felt they were there.
So why is the link needed today? How does it help anybody go forward?
Well, you know, you cannot go forward unless you deal with the most painful aspects of your history. And we can see that in 9/11. We can't go forward unless we deal with 9/11. And so a similar thing is the terror of lynching. No community can come together unless we deal with the things that we would prefer not to.
You're right about the anger you felt while researching lynching and how that act, in a sense, liberated you from it. Talk about that.
Yeah, you see, when I was writing this book, it took over a period of about 10 years of researching and writing it, and it was a very painful experience for me. But in the process of being able to write about it and talk about it, it became liberating. And it sort of got rid of most of the hostility that I originally had in relation to it because I had power over it. Because to be able to discourse and write about it and talk about it, you overcome it.
Writing as catharsis. So you'd recommend that for anybody who's feeling discriminated against or stuck after they've been unemployed for a while or whatever it may be?
Well, I do think you have to talk about it. You have to sing about it, talk about it, write about it. And in the process of doing that, you sort of overcome your own passivity in relation to it. And you begin to shape your future rather than allowing that to shape your future.
For people who only have a vague sense of the history of lynching, what did you learn about it in your research that you think is new?
Well, I tell you what most people don't know is that lynching was not used against African Americans until after the Civil War. And it was used primarily to control the population, to return them to slavery. So what we need to know is that between about 1880 and about 1940, lynching was a prominent reality. As many as 20,000 people attended a lynching, and the federal government refused to pass a law against lynching. And since it was murder, but the states in the South refused to prosecute the lynchers.
Attended a lynching. You used that term. 20,000 people in those 60 years attended a lynching. We would say attended a play, attended a concert. What does attended a lynching mean?
It was a recreation for them. It was a celebration for the whites in the South. They turn out churches. They rent. They announced it over the radio. They sent out newspaper articles about it to announce the lynchings before they would do it. So they would make it a barbecue. They called it a barbecue because most of the lynchings were burning because they wanted to torture the victim for hours as long as they could.
Ed in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with James Cohn, author of The Cross and the Lynching Tree. Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Brian? Dr. Cohn, good to speak with you. A longtime admirer of your work, although I have not yet read this book. I'm wondering if you cover at all sort of the how the death penalty really has become an analog to lynching. You know, one of the things that struck me that you just talked about is returning people to slavery. And I think that we could say that when you look at the prison industrial complex and what they're doing with black people in America in terms of the jobs that they basically don't get paid for at all is also returned to slavery. So that struck me. But my initial question was, you know, if you took a look at the death penalty as a replacement to lynching.
Yes, it has been. I say something about that in the conclusion, although I'm not a sociologist. So I did not go into detail about that. But you can study lynching. You will see that when lynching went up, death, the execution went down. And when lynching stopped, executions go up. So, yes, there is a correlation between the death penalty, prison industrial complex, and lynching.
How far do you want to go with that, though, since lynching in so many cases was of innocent people and the death penalty is executed presumably against people who have committed murder?
I'm not sure that that most of the people who are on death row as such are guilty. I mean, you have to.
You're not sure that most. That's a big statement.
I know it's a big statement, but it's certainly the state has used its own execution in order to control the population that it doesn't like. And I wouldn't say that most of them are innocent. What I would say is that most people are in prisons. They are put there under dubious circumstances because you wouldn't have 1 million black people in prison unless something was going wrong.
And maybe that's the larger question, even than the death penalty.
Yes.
And this is in the book because you look at the high rate of incarceration.
Yes.
As the modern lynching movement.
Yeah, I'd like to think of it in that way. I mentioned death penalty, but the death penalty is not the primary place where I put the modern day lynching. See, lynching is controlling a population, and it is striking terror in the population. So the prisons, the jails, are an analog to lynching of for today.
Troy in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Troy.
Good morning, Brian, and good morning, Professor Cohn. I was actually at Professor Cohn being inaugurated into the Black Arkansas Hall of Fame back in 2004-2005. I have a question for the professor. Why hasn't the United States government issued an official apology for slavery and post-Jim Crow racist policies? Thank you.
Didn't President Clinton issue something like that?
No, not an apology. I mean, he wanted to, I think. But you see, they don't issue an apology because the assumption is if they do, they would have to acknowledge that something they did was, you know, so wrong and atrocious wrong. And that might lead to a sense of a demand for reparation. And they do not want to, the government does not want to try to get into the problem of trying to pay back for what they did during slavery and Jim Crow segregation. So they're not going to issue an apology because that would give more grounds for reparations or something like that.
Troy, thanks for your call. We're just about out of time. Two things real quick. Have you been watching Occupy Wall Street through the lens of your work and your orientation? To many people, it looks like a movement of young white college grads.
Well, you know, it's more than that. But, you know, I think young white college grads are experiencing something like what the black population has experienced for a long time, which is unemployment. and which is being marginalized in the society. So as long as you are marginalized and count for nothing, you are somewhat like African Americans have been treated for four centuries. So I see a connection there.
And last thing, there was news yesterday that Cornel West will be joining you on the faculty at Union Theological Seminary. Do you know him? Are you looking forward to working with
yes,
him?
I know him. In fact, I taught with him, and we taught together when he taught at Union some time ago. So that is one of the best things I've ever heard at Union since I've been there, that Cornel West is coming.
And he's been a big critic of President Obama. How much do you share his views?
Well, I share some of his views because I think he's been right about that. But I'm not so sure that President Obama could have done what Professor West wants and still stay in as president. And he's a politician, and I think Obama wants to stay as president, and he's doing what he thinks he has to do that.
James Cone, originator of Black Liberation Theology, on the faculty at the Union Theological Seminary, and now the author of The Cross and the Lynching Tree. Always good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And finally today, coming up in just a minute, Will Hermes will join us to revisit the New York music of the 1970s. And we're going to play a little mashup that we've made of 1973 to 1977 New York music. Stay with us.